What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Friday, January 15th, 2021. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside Carolyn Pettit. Hello, Carolyn.
Hey, Greg. How are you doing?
I am great. How are you?
Doing good. Thrilled to be here. You know, I was saying, I think at a time like this, where maybe a little on edge about things outside
everything.
The world of video games. It's nice to just have the opportunity to hang out with you and talk video games for a while. So thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. Thank you for making the time for us. It's something, you know, you and I don't get to do often. I feel like we run in the same circle. I see you all the time, and not
for
all
sure.
The time, actually, and definitely not at all in 2020. But we end up at the same events, the same things. For people who don't know you, Carolyn, how do you describe yourself?
I'm a freelance game critic and writer. I was with GameSpot some time ago, and now I'm freelance. Like wrote a number of reviews for Polygon last year, including Final Fantasy VII Remake, Ghost of Tsushima, Cyberpunk, of course, and do my own self-published writing as well. So
awesome. Where can people keep up with you?
You can keep up with me on Twitter at Carolyn Michelle, probably, you know, the best place. Though that, you know, is admittedly a mix right now of video game silliness and political terror. So, be warned.
Isn't that everyone's Twitter? That's everyone's Twitter right now.
But I don't expect that to be everyone's cup of tea. Like, I feel like, I no hard feelings. And I have my own self-published writing page on at medium.com/@Carolyn Pettit, where folks can read, you know, a piece about like Last of Us 2 that I wrote last year that was really well received, and other stuff on games like Animal Crossing and stuff like that too. So
When we were doing Cyberpunk at the end of the year, they're talking so much about it. I kept bringing up your review because I loved how critical it was and the angle you had on it. How is that working right now being freelance? Is it, are editors, I guess, and sites super open to you coming in and being like, hey, I don't want to do the traditional, just here's how many levels it has. Here's how this is.
I do appreciate that there are, I feel like that the, what's, allowed or what's even desired in the the gaming criticism space has really evolved in the past, even, you know, like for 5-6 years, to the point where I think there's a real a greater appreciation and understanding that, hey, like a diversity of perspectives, like people coming at games from different angles and things, only makes the conversation around games like richer and more interesting. And so, you know, I do think that that there are editors out there that say, hey, like, let's get a Japanese person to review Ghost of Tsushima, for instance, because they may have a perspective on it that, you know, like a white player wouldn't, for instance, or, you know, I think definitely there is an appetite for that. And I appreciate that there are editors out there who are looking to bring that into their publications.
We got a lot of news to get through today, but before then, I always ask everybody, if you're going to be on here for the first time, what's your favorite game of all time?
Oh my God.
I know. You got to choose. You got to choose.
You know what? I'm going to go right now. I've been thinking so much because of the Indiana Jones news that came out this week. I have been thinking so much about how much I loved Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis, which was just a classic in my mind, LucasArts. So the Lucasfilm games label is back too, which is exciting to me as somebody who loved the classic Lucasfilm label and their output. So you're asking me right now, if you ask me tomorrow, it'll be a different response. But right now, like, I have so much admiration for the craft of that game and the way it captures the thrill of what that character is all about. And also, of course, like, hating Nazis. So
of course,
it's got like the most
it's checking all the boxes we need now, right?
Yeah.
Do you carry that over to hype for the new Indiana Jones game then?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I like the excitement, the announcement to me is so interesting right now because it's like, on one hand, like the conversation around, like as we were just kind of saying, like the conversation around games and around Indiana Jones as a character has changed a lot in the past, you know, since Raiders of the Lost Ark came out. And I think there are folks who are understandably concerned, like, you know, the optics of if they lean hard into white guy plundering, you know, global South regions for treasure, like sure. that, you know, that might be like a little yikes, but at the same time, like we know that, machine games can make games about killing Nazis and make that super satisfying. And so there are absolutely aspects of Indiana Jones that, that you can tell a really fantastic story about today that, and I mean, and you know, with their gameplay expertise, like I'm expecting great things, and I'm pumped for it personally.
Me too. I feel like it's one of those. It needs to be not a reinvention of the character, but you can't just copy the movies. You're not going to get Harrison Ford, and that would do a disservice to the product to begin with. So you have to tell your own stories, and I think they know what it is in 2021 and what they can get away with.
I trust them. I mean, I think they've done great, you know, and I love that they've never been like. They've never compromised around the like anti-Nazi, anti-fascist stuff, like in their social media or whatever, like they're very clear. And so
I mean, Pete Hines hates Nazis. We know it well.
Right. And you can totally do stuff where he's like, in like helping, say South American cultures or Middle Eastern cultures or whatever, like he can be in those environments and those kinds of danger, like the tombs and the cultures, I think, and not, and just find a new angle on it. Right. I think that there's absolutely tons of potential there. And I think they'll get it. I think they'll get it right.
And I think that's what, you know, especially taking the 2021 lens and looking back at the Indiana Jones films, it's stuff that back then flew, that you were just using lazy stereotypes for different characters and cultures. And it was stuff that I didn't think much about because I'm not going back and watching Indiana Jones. And when I was a kid, I wasn't paying attention. But with 1984 for Wonder Woman, 1984, when I started digging into that after our friend Yusuf from Ubisoft tweeted out about like, hey, this is a really terrible interpretation. And you went in and read about people being like, oh, well, the 80s movies, and they're doing this, and they're pulling the same horrible stereotypes that Indiana Jones did, but didn't know better at the time because that's how your films were being made. And it's like, and I don't suspect they'll do that here.
I'm exactly with you, totally with you on that. So
awesome. All right, cool. Then we've settled everything about Indiana Jones. For now, let's talk about the fact that we know the best-selling games of 2020. We know how the Switch did versus the Xbox and the PlayStation 5, and we know that Bungie is really, really saying goodbye to Halo, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show at patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can write in with your questions about today's topics. You can get the show ad-free. You can get it with the exclusive post show we do each and every weekday. However, if you have no bucks to toss our way and get all that extra content, no big deal. You can watch us record the show live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. If you're watching live, you have a special job. Go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up, so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, YouTube, roosterteeth.com, and podcast services around the globe. Each and every weekday. So far, we're batting 1,000. Nobody's corrected us on anything, Carolyn. Don't worry. They'll be on it. Housekeeping for you. Right now, there's a new Kind of Funny podcast up on youtube.com/kindoffunny and podcast services around the globe featuring WWE superstar Xavier Woods, a.k.a. Up, Up, Down, Down, a coffee cup, Austin Creed. It's live right now, like I said. Go pick it up. Give it a listen. We had a lot of fun there. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Blackjack. Today, we're brought to you by Hims, Brooklinen, and Burrow, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. We have four items on the Roper Report.
The Baker's Dozen.
Kevin, how are you feeling today? I haven't had my check-in.
Pretty solid, you know what I mean? I got my hash browns and egg. Mocha.
Now, how burnt are the hash browns? Carolyn, when we were doing WandaVision, getting ready to... When we were getting ready to do WandaVision, which are going up right now on youtube.com/kindoffunny, Kevin's smoke alarm was going off because you're trying to get them crispy. And I understand that, Kevin.
No. You misunderstood.
Oh, I apologize.
It's not that they got burnt. It's that I'm using one of those big, giant iron skillets. So it's
cast iron?
Yeah, but like not a normal... You know, it's the ones that you normally put on our barbecue.
Oh, so, you're using like the flat griddle kind of giant
cast
iron.
Yeah, that's it. The flat griddle.
I got it.
And it creates a lot of smoke just as you're cooking, because I don't know that it's made for indoors. So, but it works.
Okay, good.
It came out
good.
Right,
well, if you got the hash brown, who cares? It's all good. Number one on the Roper Report, the NPD numbers are in for December 2020. And that, of course, means for the entire year. But let's start with December. We're going to read from Games Beat, where Jeffy Grub, fan of the show, says Nintendo Switch dominated hardware sales in the United States throughout 2020. It easily outsold its last-gen competition in the Xbox One and PlayStation 4, but it continues to outperform PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X/S due to their supply constraints. The hybrid home/handheld Nintendo console was the top hardware of the year as well as December, according to industry tracking firm the NPD Group. We interrupt this article to bring in from gamesindustry.biz, Christopher Dring, who added this, nearly 6 million Nintendo Switch consoles were sold in Japan last year, a rise of 30% over 2019. Nintendo dominated the market, with Switch devices accounting for 87% of all consoles sold last year. The normal Switch version sold 3.9 million units, while the Switch Lite sold just over 2 million units. Back to Jeffy Grub. He says Microsoft has said that the Xbox Series X/S is the best launch in Xbox history, but there's not really hard numbers on that. Meanwhile, GameSpot says the NPD's report includes no mention at all of Xbox sales. NPD analyst Matt Piscitella, friend of the show, followed up in a tweet to mention how supply for the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series S consoles were constrained and thus negatively impacting results. Carolyn, when does the Switch stop? When does it stop being this powerhouse?
Like, seriously, what's, you know, it's not surprising to me that, the PS5 and Xbox One X, Xbox Series X/S, like,
it's so annoying. Just say Xbox. It drives me crazy, too. I'm like,
It's not surprising to me that they can't meet demand right now. But what kind of is surprising to me is that people aren't being like, you know what, I'm going to hold on to this, you know, this $500 and wait, like, because I know I want that PS5. Like, no, people still see the Switch as something that's like, we all know it's not as powerful as these new consoles, but that appeal, that unique appeal of the Switch, I think just remains so alluring to people that, and I mean, Nintendo just obviously with like Animal Crossing, you know, up their sleeve in 2020 and the midst of COVID. I mean, obviously, like, just the right game at the right time. Man, what a just masterful domination of the market by Nintendo. Like, it's really like 87% of all consoles, like when you sold last year were Switches. That's just, that's really impressive to me.
I can't, it's obviously, I love my Switch. I think my Switch is great, but it's just the fact that the Switch has been around so long and still finds this audience that isn't saturated. Yeah. And like you're saying, you know, 87% over in Japan, right, for what's going on there and how it is the Switch Lite also selling units, which I don't even think about it. You know, Tim mentioned the other day on, I think, GamesCast, he was playing something downstairs and then went upstairs and before bed turned on his Switch Lite. I was like, oh, right, like there's that skew as well. And I'm here sitting, I think, like most people probably in our industry, or at least in our sphere of audience and stuff, of like, cool, when's the Switch Pro coming? And that's what's even crazier to think about, is that they're just going to keep selling. They're going to, as soon as this number dips a little bit, here comes the Switch Pro to, you know, kick it back into high gear.
I mean, it's, for me, it's thrilling to see that this success, like, because the Wii U was so obviously like it didn't find its audience, but you see the DNA of the Wii U in the Switch. Maybe, you know, you don't get to the Switch without the Wii U. And so, like, in a way, the Switch also for me kind of functions as like a redemption of the Wii U, or at least what Nintendo was, you know, like striving for. Maybe the technology wasn't quite there yet. They couldn't quite, you know, obviously the game
break away from the unit.
Right. It's so, you know, I mean, obviously I grew up with Nintendo, so I do have a soft spot in my heart for Nintendo, and I want to see, and I love that they do their own thing. I love that they're not sort of going toe to toe trying to beat, you know, Sony and Microsoft at their own game, right? Because that, like, I mean, I want innovation. I want them. I think the market's way more interesting when Nintendo is like, let's kind of do our own thing. So the fact that you know, after there was a period there where I thought, oh God, they may kind of be out of it almost. Like, they may be just not in the same conversation anymore. It may be like, well, we'll start talking about like Sony and Microsoft, and then like for the kids, like Nintendo or whatever. But I think we have to acknowledge with the success of Switch that that Nintendo is still like a hugely major player. And
they're not going anywhere, right? That's the biggest thing. I think like what you're talking about with Wii U, I remember being at IGN and on a podcast and talking about like, all right, this is the beginning of the end. Now they're going to pivot and you're going to start getting Mario games. They're going to go third party. They're going to go Sega. Uh-huh. And then to see the Switch do everything it's done and like you're saying, like innovate, and whether that be the fact that, I mean, we take it for granted now that it's this hybrid, it's this handheld, it's this console, it's whatever you want it to be. Then to have things like Switch Lite, then to have, the Labo, then to have Ring Fit, then to have, like, they're still in the RC car, Mario Kart. Like, Nintendo's still out there doing it. And I, you know, for years I've said that I think of Nintendo, and I don't mean this as an insult, as a toy company. And I think they think of that too, where like not only is their unit a toy, but the games you put on it are a toy. Where Luigi's Mansion 3 isn't trying to be The Last of Us Part 2. And it doesn't need to be, because people want to play Luigi's Mansion 3 as it is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, like Luigi's Mansion 3 for me has that kind of like Disneyland haunted mansion appeal to it, right? It's a completely different kind of experience, but a wonderful one nonetheless. And yeah, I mean, I'm so thrilled that Nintendo has solidified their own identity and really found success with it. And man, like these numbers just make it make that like undeniable. So.
Moving on to some more numbers here. This is December 2020 NPD as top 10 for games. Remember, of course, this includes digital sales for some, not all. I'll call it out here, the ones that have asterisks. But right now, in terms of sales here, number one, Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War. Number two, Cyberpunk 2077. This doesn't include digital sales. So that's a number two showing without having to account for all the digital ones that happen, which I'm sure were a ton. Number three, Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Number four, Spider-Man Miles Morales. Number five, Madden NFL 21. Number six, Animal Crossing New Horizons. That is up from in November, it was number eight. So that Christmas bump and the holiday bump of getting it out there brought it all the way up to number six. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe at number seven. In November, that was number 11. Again, the holiday bump of people buying the Switch. Number eight, NBA 2K21. Number nine, a new entry. I'm sorry. And also, I totally stopped. Animal Crossing, Mario Kart, and NBA don't include digital numbers either. Number nine is Immortals Fenyx Rising. This is, of course, its debut on the chart. And then number 10, Super Mario 3D All-Stars, doesn't include digital, and that's up from 12 again.
I'm pleasantly surprised in a way to see Immortals Fenyx Rising on this list, because that's a game that it seemed to me that most people, you know, in my sphere kind of regarded with like a bit of a shrug, like, oh, it's like Ubisoft game plus kind of Breath of the Wild, but probably like a watered down, you know, Breath of the Wild or something, you know, I don't know, like I have not played it myself, but I've heard from at least some folks who have played it, and that it really has its own kind of identity. It has its own kind of spark, and that it's really like appealing and endearing. So, you know, I hope that game finds an audience, and it's like, and you know, I hope to find a little time to try it out myself one of these days.
It definitely seems like a game that either you are hot or you are cold on. Like there doesn't seem to be an in-between middling on it. And I don't mean a middling like meh, like, because like I would describe myself as cold on it, but I also describe myself as someone who will go back to it. I probably play, we got review codes, and I must have played 6 hours in the little window we had up until embargo. Mm-hmm. And what I found with it was I enjoyed playing it in the moment, but when I put it down, I wasn't drawn back to it. And I feel part of that is that, it's Breath of the Wild. Yeah, it's Assassin's Creed. And this is right after Valhalla. We must have had, you know, been playing. I must have put in 40 hours into Valhalla, and then this code dropped, and it was like, go do it again.
The Ubisoft game saturation is real, in the sense of Ubisoft game as like that kind of just, the open world template that follows that particular kind of formula, right?
100%. Exactly. Yeah, it's a, what is that? And that actually leads to a very interesting question. The nanobiologist, of course, a longtime friend of the show, he's out there right now watching and, of course, correcting us, says, hi, Greg and Carolyn. NPD numbers are out, and interestingly, there are two Ubisoft games in the top 10. Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which released earlier the previous month, and Immortals Fenyx Rising that came out about halfway into December. There's always complaints about the Ubisoft formula being overdone and never working, but these numbers say otherwise. How will this work, though, when earlier this year Ubisoft announced a change to their creative process after all the scandals? Do you think the stockholders and business partners will see these numbers and say, nah, keep doing what you're doing. Don't fix what isn't broken, when Ubisoft has expressed intent to finally allow variations from their long-running formula that's been going on since 2007? Of course, obviously, there was all the scandals and stuff going around about abuse and toxic workplace stuff at Ubisoft. On top of that, if you remember, this time last year, I have an article here from cogconnected.com on January 18th, 2020. Due to last year's poor reception of Ghost Recon Breakpoint and The Division 2's disappointing sales, Ubisoft is reportedly planning to restructure its editorial team in order to mix things up in the future. According to what sources have told Video Game Chronicle, Ubisoft's editorial team, which is responsible for the cohesive vision of the company's games, will be restructured with the goal of making its games more varied. Carolyn, how do you interpret that and then the success of both Assassin's Creed and Phoenix Rising?
You know, I mean, oh boy, it's like a double-edged sword in a sense, the Ubisoft formula, because it works, right? It has had enduring success because, like, so many of us do find something appealing about having a world like laid out for us like a banquet with all of these like icons and things to do and collect. And you know, I mean, so obviously, like, there is something fundamental about that works. Although, as I said, I think there is a point at which you really start to get diminishing returns, where people are like, okay, like, I've done this, you know, find some way to like to change it up. And so I don't think Ubisoft needs to, you know, jettison that entirely, but I do think they need to be more, you know, mindful about trying to find ways to infuse it with dynamics and things that make it feel, you know, fresh and unique, and like it's not just like, oh, the game I've played 10 times before, but with this skin or that skin.
Sure,
so like
sure.
One thing I'm really curious about is, I think we learned this past week that Massive is making a like an open world Star Wars game, right? And so, you know, like that is, I'm really excited about that news, but also I'm like, okay, if it is just like Ubisoft game with a Star Wars skin, I'm going to be disappointed. But I think I know there are ways that they can make that super awesome. I'm very curious at this point, like what do they have in mind? Like, what are they going to do with that? Right. So.
What I think is interesting, to piggyback off of Nana's question and the article from last year, right, is that the article from last year is talking specifically about Breakpoint and Division 2, which while our Ubisoft games and our collectathons and our go do stuff, we're also this multiplayer grounded military shooter thing. Whereas I think you look at the success here, and then even over the summer when it was like, you know, the fact that Cassandra was supposed to be the lead of Odyssey, but the board was like, no, you need a male in there too. Get a male in there. Like that kind of crap. I feel that's more the shakeup they're talking about. And I would even argue that I think Immortals Phoenix Rising fits that shakeup, where Immortals Phoenix Rising is the Ubisoft game of, like, you're talking about this banquet and this menu of what do you want to do and where do you want to go? But also it is, hey, we have voiceover from the gods. Zeus is telling you this story. Your character is breaking the fourth wall. It is cartoony. It is Breath of the Wild. I think, especially even when you bring up Massive and Star Wars, that's the kind of angle. Is what do you take the tried and true Ubisoft stuff and do cool things with it, rather than be, all right, cool, you're another guy with beard, sunglasses, and a backwards hat and a military vest. Go kill something.
100%. And to Hogwarts point too, like, I mean, Watch Dogs Legion, I found like, I mean, the recruitment mechanics in that, for instance, I mean, were really fresh and different and interesting, right? Like, and yes, like, tonally, obviously, like, that world, like, they do know how to make their worlds feel tonally very different, and that's huge. Like, that's very important. So, I definitely, like, they need editorially, in terms of just, like, the writing, the content, they need to avoid future missteps, like, you know, creating games where it seems like they're presenting Black Lives Matter as like a, you know, terrorist organization or whatever, that sort of thing. But yeah, like I think that I think we are seeing them do some interesting things with what we might sort of call the Ubisoft game formula.
100%. And I think that there's, yeah, no end to that. And you brought it up. Hugvart's here in the chat and says, I played all three Ubisoft games this year, and they're all different enough when you're in the world. Immortals Fenyx Rising, very fun and happy. Watch Dogs Legion is dark and grim, and Assassin's Creed Valhalla is adventurous and serious. I think that is a great point to it, right? Where I put down Fenyx because I was like, I should go back to Valhalla. I was already doing this stuff in Valhalla. And now, with a huge bunch of months breaking it up, I'm more inclined to go back to Fenyx right now, I feel, than Valhalla. Because I feel like a Fenyx being a children's book or that kind of like, you know, colorful poppy narrative, I feel more, I could just jump in and pick right up. Whereas in Valhalla, I'm going to be like, wait, what was Eivor doing? And who was I talking to? And who did I align with? Yeah. I feel like that's part of it.
Yeah, totally.
Speaking of all these Ubisoft games, let's talk about the top 2020 games of the year. Again, with NPD out, we can now talk about the games that sold the most. So this is the 2020 top games. Again, I will call you out on what is not including digital. This is ranked on dollar sales. Number one, Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War. Number two, Call of Duty Modern Warfare. Number three, Animal Crossing New Horizons, which of course doesn't count digital downloads, which I want it higher. If you included the digital downloads, maybe it would be. And more importantly, keep in mind, it's beaten by two Call of Duties that are on every platform known to man. Animal Crossing is just on Switch, which is nuts. Number four, Madden NFL 21. Number five, Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Number six, The Last of Us Part Two. Number seven, Ghost of Tsushima. Number eight, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. No digital. Number nine, Super Mario 3D All-Stars. No digital. Number 10, Kind of Funny's Game of the Year 2020, Final Fantasy VII Remake. Number 11, Greg Miller's Game of... No, I'm kidding around. Marvel's Avengers. Number 12, Marvel's Spider-Man, Miles Morales. A great showing for Miles. Number 13, NBA 2K21, no digital sales. Number 14, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, no digital sales. Number 15, FIFA 21. Number 16, Mortal Kombat 11. Number 17, Dragon Ball Z, Kakarot. Number 18, MLB The Show 20. Number 19, Cyberpunk 2077, not including digital sales. And number 20, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 plus 2. Quite a list. Well, 2020, quite a year, even when you include all the Nintendo games that are old.
Yeah, and I mean, so many thoughts in response to this. One is, like, Marvel's Avengers. Like, that a game can be, you know, say, the 11th best-selling game of the year and still kind of be regarded as, like, a disappointment, you know? Or, like, totally. Like... I don't know. I feel like there's so much to, you know, to unpack around that, around like the business, the amount, like the budgets of like AAA games and the expectations around the returns on those.
I mean, that's a great, I didn't even think that's a great interpretation, like, of it too. You were talking about, you know, considered a disappointment. I immediately jumped to fans and audience, but you talk about Square Enix, right? And calling it out in their financial report of like, yeah, I might even think about that yet. No, it's not, you're the 11th best selling game of the year and you're not, the publisher's not happy.
Right. You know, it's a tough business, man. It's a brutal business. I would love to know if Animal Crossing New Horizons, if it did include digital sales, if it would even top the Call of Duties. I would love to know that. I mean, for me, that's the breakout game phenomenon of the year, regardless of, you know, if it's third or first on this list, because I mean, Call of Duty is a phenomenon unto itself. I think we all know that, like, there are so many people out there who just, I mean, almost maybe exclusively play Call of Duty, or, you know, I mean, it just has its own kind of culture. And so seeing them at the top of the list, not really surprising.
Yeah, but right. It's Animal what you expect.
But Animal Crossing, you know, at number three, I mean, and just what a reflection of the year that 2020 was. And and again, to go back to, like, you know, to Nintendo for having found kind of their place in this, in the current just sort of console and gaming ecosystem. You know, it's pretty cool to see that game way up there.
Yeah, and you want to talk about games that defined 2020. I think when we look back and you talk about it, I'm not trying to take anything away from Call of Duty or the fans of Call of Duty. And I know, obviously, you know, both them and their multiplayers, and I see Andy dropping in the Warzone all the time. But, like, everyone's going to talk about the movement that was Animal Crossing and the fact that me, a lifelong, or I guess I was in college when the first Animal Crossing came to America. But, like, you know, a long time fan of Animal Crossing, the fact that it even blew my expectations out of the water for what the game would be, let alone what the success of the game would be and the way it would permeate pop culture. It's crazy.
Yeah. I'm surprised, to be honest, that Valhalla, with its late release in the year, is, you know, above Last of Us 2 and Ghost of Tsushima.
But again, you figure it's all the platforms, right? That's always the game you play with it.
That's right. Yeah, true.
Yeah, that's the thing I always fall into where you're like, oh my gosh, but then it's like, oh, and then it's actually, I think, gets impressive when you start going like, well, man, Last of Us did really well for just being on PlayStation.
Absolutely. And you know, Miles Morales by that same, you know, by that same token, which
The number 12 ranking for Miles, I was surprised by as well. Yeah, I mean, granted, it's on PlayStation 4 and PS5, but I know it's a game that I love so much, and I would, you know, it's on my short list for game of the year, but so many other people are just like, oh, it's more Spider-Man, which, of course, the best-selling superhero game of all time, and, you know, a huge IP for Sony, but still, I don't think it has the juice when you talk about it.
And I mean, I think that game does so much Miles as a protagonist, too, you know, which, I mean... It's great to see because he's a fantastic character. You really get a different feel for what, you know, his world is, his New York is. So yeah, props to them for such a fantastic game there.
While we're here, what was your 2020 game of the year?
It was Hades for sure. You know, Hades, which
Supergiant,
I'm almost a little surprised. I mean, like, I'm sure first by Supergiant Sanders, that game did tremendously well.
You hope so, yeah.
Yeah, I would have loved to have seen, like, you know, an indie game like that, you know, break the top 20. That would have been probably, like, almost unprecedented. But it was great to see that game become the phenomenon that it was in 2020. Just such a wonderful fusing of mechanics and narrative, the writing, you know, that's a game where, like, if a game just offers kind of a rewarding gameplay loop, that's fantastic. But what really kept me coming back to Hades, and I think Supergiant just nailed this relationship perfectly, was the way that the unfolding relationships and the developing, you know, the opportunity to like the unlocking more of the story or becoming closer with other characters was like the reward in that game that really kept me coming back to it and persevering.
For sure. So, yeah. And I think, it's, you know, Hades is such an interesting one. When you want to talk about sales, obviously so many of these are led by brick and mortars having a box on the shelf, which obviously Hades doesn't, being on Switch and being on PC. And it will be interesting, I think, you know, when inevitably whatever the exclusivity window is lifts and Hades goes to PlayStation and or Xbox or one or the other, whatever it is, to see what it'll do on those consoles on top of it. Because I do think the Switch audience, and I'm speaking maybe out of turn because I know we all own our Switches and we all love our Switches, but I also know the reason Switch is so successful is people like my friend Kyle, who has been a lapsed gamer for two generations, picked up a Switch over Christmas, right? And he picked it up to play Animal Crossing and play Kart. And that, like, they're not necessarily going to the eShop and looking for what's new, what's hot.
Yeah.
So I think Hades has some legs when it gets out on other ones.
And, but, you know, there is that question in my mind. So digital sales not included here. Cyberpunk 2077, you know, if it had included digital sales, and then, like, you know, what volume of refunds, like what volume of, like, were those sales then, like, rescinded, you know? There's just that curiosity there around that.
Cyberpunk. Yeah. The story that just keeps going somehow keeps getting worse. I don't understand how it keeps getting worse. When are we turning the corner on the news?
Oh, man.
Let's move to something else that's super sad. Number two, Bungie is officially closing down the Halo archives. They put up their weekly update, and if you're a Destiny 2 fan, there's a lot of stuff about the moon and loot pools in there that Fran's really mad about, but I am not equipped to talk about. But this was interesting. Almost 9 years ago, stats and files from our previous franchise, Halo, stopped getting updated on Bungie.net. Since then, all stats, files, and other data from Halo 2, Halo 3, Halo 3 ODST, and Halo Reach have lived on in remembrance at halo.bungie.net. On February 9th, the halo.bungie.net website will be taken offline permanently. Everyone is welcome to save their stats and files however they can, if they'd like to save anything. Please keep in mind that our news articles, forums, and groups were imported into the current version of Bungie.net back in 2013. It's one of those weird, like, video game legacy.com thing.
And you know, it's, I mean, obviously it's been just gathering dust there for a long time. Like, this is, you know, it makes sense. And yet I do remember when, you know, Halo 2 first came out, and for me, it was very novel at the time and tremendously exciting to, you know, like, I'm playing this game on my console And then I can go to this like website and see my stats there. I know today it sounds pretty mundane, but there really was something like exciting about it at the time, it really, like, I think it fueled the desire for competition. You know, it made it a super easy way to like reference your stats and compare with, you know, your friends and other folks. It was, for its time, a really cool feature. It's a piece of
video game legacy. And I think for, you know, old timers like me, and I've never been an Xbox person or a Halo person, but I definitely remember going to this website. I definitely remember looking at my stats. That was one of the big deals about getting into this connected world, right? And having the internet plugged into these boxes and being able to play online was all of a sudden having this legacy.
And Bungie, just like the way they, I mean, I think, you know, in a way we could say maybe that they're responsible for making console, you know, sort of multiplayer competitive gaming, at least in those early years, like what it was like there was so much derision at the time, like, so, yeah. Well, if you really want to like be competitive, you know, play competitive first person shooters online, like you have to play on PC, you have to, but Bungie really invested in it in Halo as a multiplayer game that should be taken seriously with features like this. And, you know, so I think they are part of having brought console competitive gameplay where it is today.
100%. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's a little weird history thing. So get your stats if you want your stats saved. Number three on the Roper Report, 505 Games has bought the Puzzle Quest developers. This is Mike Minotti over at GameSpeak. 505 Games and its parent company, Digital Bros, announced today the acquisition of Infinity Plus 2, the studio behind Puzzle Game Hits, Puzzle Quest, and Gems of War. The deal gives 505 Games a studio with free-to-play experience. Infinity Plus 2's titles have earned over $200 million in revenue. 505 was already the publisher of Gems of War, a free-to-play puzzle game with RPG elements that is available on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Switch, PC, and mobile. I love Puzzle Quest. I want to see more Puzzle Quest.
yeah, exactly. I mean, Puzzle Quest was such a refreshing. Like it was when that game first came along. It was like, this is like a perfect. It's you know, the chocolate and peanut butter thing, right? It's like two great tastes that taste great together. How has nobody really done this way before? It's wonderful, you know, it's compulsively playable. I can't say I've kept up with their output, you know, in the free-to-play era at all, but you know, I mean, definitely down to see what they're you know, able to do in the future.
See, it's, I agree with you 100%, and that's when I see this Gems of War, I'm like, huh,
yeah,
maybe I should try Gems of War today.
Hey, free to play.
You know, want me up later. I'll get on the PlayStation Store here and start the download at some point. And then fourth and final on the Roper Report, good news. Hitman 3 is coming to Switch alongside the other versions. We start with Steve Watts at GameSpot. We've known since October that Hitman 3 is coming to Nintendo Switch via cloud streaming, but both Nintendo and developer IO Interactive had not yet mentioned a release date. That's changed now with official word that it will come right alongside the other platforms on January 20th. IO announced the date with a tweet. That puts the Switch release on the same day as the more powerful platforms that will run it natively on the hardware itself. PC, PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X and S. The Switch version will require an internet connection since it's streaming. This is one of the handful of streaming games on the Switch and was announced alongside with Control. In GameSpot's Control Cloud Edition review, Phil Hornshaw said it ran genuinely well on Switch with some degree of noticeable frame rate issues and graphical compromises. It's not the best way to play Control, but it will do in a pinch, so we can probably expect the same for Hitman. Now, related, Stadia put out a thing talking about Hitman 3 also coming to Stadia day and date on the 20th and a new feature. You've just beaten a challenging level that you designed in Hitman 3 and want to share the experience with others. With State Share, a new Stadia feature launching across the entire Hitman World of Assassination trilogy on January 20th, you can. State Share is an exciting feature that's only possible with Stadia, letting you create unique game states to share with friends. State Share turns a normal image or video capture into a portal to a unique game experience. By embedding a game state within each capture, sharing gameplay for others to watch is transformed into a chance to try a playable slice of the game yourself. Each game state is defined by specific gameplay elements like player loadout, objectives, and difficulty, and trying each one is as easy as clicking a link. So, Carolyn, two questions for you.
What's
your hype level for Hitman 3, and then where are you at with Stadia?
Whew, I mean, I'm like, I'm excited to play Hitman 3. I think the last two Hitman games have been, they've done that that clockwork world thing super well. It's so much fun to find all of the there's so many creative and clever ways to get the job done. And so I love the kind of puzzle game aspect of it, almost that kind of like investigating and figuring out like, okay, you know, I know this is my goal. Like, how do I kind of working backwards? How do I achieve that? So any, you know, new environments to do that in, like, definitely, like, I'm on board. The Switch release, you know, is I'm a little puzzled by the appeal of streamed, you know, games on Switch, because to me, like, it really seems like such a big, I don't know. I mean, such a big part
it's
of the
money, right?
Of Switch.
It's got to be money. It's just these developers understanding the footprint of the Switch and trying to get their games there. And I think it's trying to get your game to as many people as possible. But then also, is it going to run well? Is it going to be? It's not really the best place to play it.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, it you do lose one of the things that makes the Switch unique, which is the ability to kind of like take it anywhere. Like, you have to, you know, obviously, kind of sacrifice that to play these games. So, and as far as Stadia, I have never used a Stadia. I've never been in, I don't know if I've ever been in the same room as a Stadia. This feature, this like state share that you just, you know, you read off the blurb about, and it says like, it's as, you know, trying each one is as easy as clicking a link. Like, I'd have to try that because I don't really fully understand what you're talking about there. But I mean, it sounds potentially cool. But I don't really know how that works. So,
it sounds weird, right? In terms of like, it's stuff you're creating. So it's like, I assassinated the guy, you know, I went into the thing. It's what I guess kind of Blessing was talking that Giant Bomb does, but in the reverse, right? Of like, I killed this guy with this weapon in this place. Can you do it faster? I guess would be in Hitman world.
Oh, so like a challenge like that you create like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But I feel like that even that's going to be sloppy to an extent in interest. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't get me going, and I'm like, that's why I got to play on Stadia.
Like, I do not see a path to relevance for Stadia at this point. I mean, I understand that they're going to keep, you know, trying to make it happen to whatever extent that they can. It's I don't see it happening. So yeah. But
good for them. I mean, keep good trying it. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
I've enjoyed. Like, I feel like my impression of both Stadia and xCloud would be different if 2020 and 2021 were normal years. Because that's why I was excited for Stadia. That's why I was excited for xCloud. I'm like, I'm on the road every other weekend. I don't want to drag my PlayStation. I don't want to drag my consoles or anything.
That and totally so makes sense. Yeah.
That would have been the way to do it, right? But then since I'm just home all the time, it's like, all right, cool. Let's keep going.
Yep.
Hold on. Right now, I see downloaded console, Gems of War. We're going to do it.
There you go, man.
We're
getting
Gems of War right there. There we go.
Well, you know, we may never see you again. It's going to be going to just take over your life.
Let's see how these free to play microtransactions work out for me over there. Ladies and gentlemen, of course, we want you to be part of the show. Patreon.com/KindaFunnyGames. Over on Patreon.com/KindaFunnyGames, you can write in with your questions. You can get the exclusive post show we do, and you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, Gregway, this episode of Kinda Funny Games Daily is brought to you by Hims. ForHims.com is all about men's wellness. We all know the story. Andy and Nick wanted to maintain their own wellness, so they looked to Hims to help keep their hair full and healthy. And I can confirm, as I've ran my fingers through both of their hairs, it's full and healthy. Through Hims, you can also get prescription medication that treats ED. Real science, real solutions to ED. Hims makes it easy. Hims connects you with a licensed medical professional online who can prescribe FDA-approved prescription medication to treat ED. You get the same active ingredient as the expensive little pill, but without the expensive price tag. This could cost hundreds of bucks if you had to go to a doctor or a pharmacy, but not so with Hims. Hims makes it simple and affordable. No embarrassing conversations, no expensive appointments. Just answer a few questions online about your medical history, and a provider will confidentially review. If approved, your medication is shipped directly to your door, and discreet packaging and shipping is free. No more searching online for answers to questions about ED or sexual wellness. Just go to your Hims account and ask a medical professional you can trust. Why live with ED when the solution can be simple? Try Hims today by starting out with a free online visit. Go to forhims.com/funnygames for your free visit. That's forhims.com/funnygames, forhims.com/funnygames. Prescription products are subject to medical provider approval and require an online consultation with a medical provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. See the website for full details and safety information. Remember, that's forhims.com/funnygames. Up next is Brooklinen. Life is too short to sleep between anything less than really nice sheets. But maybe you've looked at some retailers and calculated the years of interest you'd pay for just one set and gave up. Trust me, Greg Miller, go to Brooklinen. You know it. I know it. I don't even have to read the ad. I love Brooklinen. I sleep on Brooklinen sheets and I use Brooklinen towels. That's how much I love Brooklinen, Kevin. Maybe you didn't know, Kevin, but I'm telling you right now. Brooklinen was started by Rich and Vicky, who also tried to find beautiful home essentials that didn't cost an arm and a leg. And when they couldn't, they founded Brooklinen as the first direct-to-consumer bedding company. They work directly with manufacturers to make luxury available directly to you without the luxury-level markups. Brooklinen has a variety of sheets, colors, patterns, and materials to fit your needs and tastes. Brooklinen has over 50,000 five-star reviews and counting and is so confident in their product that all of their bedding comes with a lifetime warranty. And Brooklinen is so much more than sheets. They've got comforters, pillows, towels, even loungewear, and more. You can buy sheets, bedding, and pillows at once to save even more. It's 2021. Do something nice for yourself to start the new year. To help you do that, Brooklinen has a special offer. Go to brooklinen.com and use the promo code GAMES to get $25 off when you spend $100 or more plus free shipping. That's brooklinen.com and enter the promo code GAMES to get $25 off when you spend $100 or more plus free shipping. Brooklinen.com. Use the promo code GAMES at checkout. And the final sponsor of the day is Burrow. I can't stand shopping for furniture online. You know that. You go all over the place. You don't know what you're getting. Can you trust them? Then if you go to a store, right, there's too many options. You got to deal with the transporting. It's frustrating. That's why I'm excited to tell you Kinda Funny Games Daily is supported by Burrow, the furniture company that's designing smarter, simpler things for modern life at home. They built the company from the ground up to fix all the ways that shopping for furniture is frustrating. Every decision they make, from the first sketch of a new couch to the fast, free delivery promise, is made with your experience in mind. Burrow provides easy online shopping. No more visits to far-flung warehouse stores. No high-pressure salespeople. Plus, Burrow's world-class support team is available whenever you need them. It's furniture designed for the way you live. The credenzas are actually tall enough to fit next-gen consoles standing vertically, and the award-winning Nomad sofa has a built-in USB charger. Assembly is simple. Burrow customers literally write reviews applauding the instructions for being easy to follow. Modular design means they're easy to set up, but also easy to take you with you to your next home. Tim was on the show yesterday. He actually is using a Burrow couch, which I didn't know, and said he loves it. When Jen was complaining about our couch last night, we went to Burrow.com, and they have a really cool one that can fold out into a giant bed, and I like that. There's fast, free shipping on every order. Burrow saves users an average of $100 on large items like a couch. Right now, you can get $75 off your first order at Burrow.com/games. That's Burrow, BURROW.com/games for $75 off your Burrow purchase. Burrow.com/games. Carolyn.
Yo.
I can't wait to see if I wear my wife down and get this giant couch that folds out into a giant bed or whatever. But that's so far away. If I wanted something more immediate, say what came to the mom and grop shops, where would I go?
Well, Greg, the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Out today, Jet Cave Adventure on Xbox One and PC, Solar Blast on Switch, Writhe on Switch, Curling on Switch, Gunslingers and Zombies on Switch, EQI comes for free to Steam, Path of Exile, Echoes of the Atlantis launches on PC, and then GameSpot reports almost 6 years after launch, Axiom Verge is getting its first piece of post-launch console content, and it's free. The new content is a randomizer mode, which is currently live in beta for the PC version of the game. The mode will be released for consoles, also for free, at a later date. And then new dates for you, Bloodroots, a game I adored on PlayStation in 2020, is coming to Steam March 12th, 2021. I got a deal of the day for you. If you have Prime Gaming, well, let's start again. If you have Amazon Prime, you have Prime Gaming. And that means you get a whole bunch of different game goods and free stuffs. It also means you get a free subscription to give away to whichever Twitch channel you want. We would love it to be us. So if you're listening right now, you're driving the tractor, you're driving a tractor trailer, you're driving just a trailer, you're in a trailer, you'd see a trailer on the road right now, you're listening to a podcast. Remember, when you get home, you can just log into your Amazon Prime, then go to Twitch, then connect the accounts, and guess what? You get free content and you can support us. However, the deal of the day is, beginning today, Prime Gaming members can claim an exclusive slushy bear bundle for the hit battle royale game Fall Guys. Appropriately themed for season 3 winner knockout, this bundle includes a brand new slushy bear costume and 6,500 kudos to help players fast track their way to their next in-game goodie. This is the second Fall Guys bundle available for Prime members, with 4 additional drops planned until May 2021. Whew. We got there, Carolyn. It's time for reader mail. Now, we might get both questions in. We might just get one question in. But we're going right to the, I was going to give you a choice. There's no choice. BJ Bernardo writes in about the Indiana Jones stuff.
Yeah.
BJ Bernardo says, do you think the Indiana Jones name and brand is popular enough to move consoles and or drive up Game Pass subscriptions? Does being a popular name slash brand even matter? Are people so hangry for bigger, good quality Xbox exclusive games that a game like The Medium could move consoles slash drive up Game Pass subs? Karen, what do you think?
I mean, so listen, Indiana Jones as like an IP, I think it's inconsistent, right? I mean, I think most of us love, I think Raiders of the Lost Ark is like the greatest adventure film of all time, Last Crusade. But I mean, I think Crystal Skull, et cetera, like it's not like Indiana Jones in and of itself equals like excitement and, it's just universally beloved. So I really think that what it's going to come down to is not just the name itself and the IP itself, but what, Machine Games and, Bethesda, like, do with it. Can they create a game that really, that leverages Indiana Jones in such a way that people are like, because if they do, then I think, yes, I think people absolutely will, sign up to Game Pass because they want to play the amazing Indiana. If it's a game that kind of, has the appeal of something like an Uncharted, but with its own identity as, Indiana Jones, if it captures that like 1930s, 1940s mystique and really, nails what that property represents in the collective imagination for so many of us, there's no question that it could be that kind of, that kind of driver for Game Pass subscriptions and stuff.
What'll be fascinating about it is there's two different audiences to talk about, and BJ hints at it and talks about it, right? Number one, there's us, the people who talk about games, obviously the people who would watch a show this nerdy about video games, right? Yeah. Who are stoked to see, man, the people who did Wolfenstein are doing this and Bethesda this and like just Indiana Jones in general. And I think, being old and working with so many young people, like Blessing hasn't seen any of the Indiana Jones. Uh-huh. Tim hasn't seen any of the Indiana Jones. And it's like, wow, that's nuts. But I do think the name carries enough. And I do think that if they nail it and those first looks are great and the previews are great and everybody's like, man, clearly they're doing the Uncharted thing, which was inspired by Tomb Raider, which is inspired by Indiana Jones.
Exactly.
Like, if you get that relationship down and people at a glance go, oh man, this looks like a fun action adventure game, they're going to be in whether they're a fan of it or not. I think the nostalgia then does make people like me who loved the movies be like, oh, I really want to play that. But then what gets fascinating is, because think about it, they said in their statement when they put out the teaser trailer, which was just, the hat getting grabbed, that like, we're still a way away from this game. Totally. So where is Game Pass, but more importantly, xCloud going to be when that game drops? Because in the same way I'm talking about my friend Kyle, who bought a Switch this year finally to play all this stuff, if there's Indiana Jones ads everywhere and they're literally like, play today for $14 on anything, on your phone, on your tablet, on your TV at that point, you would assume, on your computer.
Yeah,
I do wonder how many people would come in off the benches of like, oh, I don't know what that is, but 10, and they'll probably do some kind of deal of $5, $10 to get in on it. Sure, why not?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think they can absolutely leverage it that way. I mean, I already think, it already seems to me that Game Pass, personally, I think it's a pretty fantastic value. Oh, yeah, totally. I love it as a service. But I mean, and part of what I love about it is that not everything on it is the bigger, games. You have that wonderful selection of like indies and stuff too. It's a really varied selection, but I understand that, those smaller indie games are probably not in most cases going to be what gets people to take that leap.
Right. Yeah.
So hopefully it's like you get games like Indiana Jones on there to get people to hop on. And then once they're there, maybe they'll say, oh, well, hey, I already have all this available to me. Let me try out some of these smaller games since I'm not paying anything extra to play them.
Yeah, and that's the most interesting argument about it, right? Where I think to bring the medium into this conversation, I've seen the medium at all the events we react to and do the live stuff for, and it's like, oh, okay, oh, that looks interesting. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not, oh my God, I can't wait to play it, blah, blah, blah. But guess what? It drops at the end of this month for free on the Game Pass I already have. Yeah, I'm going to play the medium. They have nothing to lose there, right? Like, I have no expectations. So by just starting and entering it, maybe I get hooked. Maybe I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you figure those small experiences you're talking about, like the medium I would throw in, though I know for some people it's not, that's what keeps you in between the giant AAA releases, what keeps you on Xbox Game Pass.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, I'm already here, you know, I mean, yeah, like, and the you know, I mean, the Twitter account for Game Pass, it's constantly like, hey, new stuff is coming. And even if it's, even, you know, it'll be like, here's 5 or 7 games coming soon. Even if, you know, most of them are like, nothing there really grabs me. There's, you know, at least like usually something where I'm like, you know, I want to at least try that. And so I think that, I mean, I can't speak for other players. I don't know how their subscription rates are doing really, but for me, they're doing a great job of retaining me as a subscriber.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think it's such a nominal fee that as long as I pop on there and do something or see something or want to play Grounded or whatever, like, I'm happy it's there and I'm happy to keep paying for it as they keep putting cool stuff on there and supporting smaller developers, obviously, who are just trying to make it.
Absolutely.
Shondell Neal writes in patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you can, and says, I know I'm a day late concerning the Resident Evil Village news. Something's got me thinking when Tim and Greg were discussing seeing possibly something new announced at the showcase. Capcom recently heard about all those hacks that happened, and the hacks were some of the dates that had RE4 remake, but also there were RE games including a remax/reboot of RE Outbreak listed for 2021. Could this be shown? What, Carolyn, how do you feel about Resident Evil?
I love the early, you know, PlayStation games. Sure. I liked the RE2 remake. I thought it, you know, I thought it was it updated that game in some pretty exciting ways. I did, you know, 3, it seemed like the response was kind of underwhelming, so I didn't try that one myself. So I'm kind
of
like,
don't listen to him. I played it. You didn't miss anything.
Okay, yeah. But I mean, I mean, I'm super excited that with like 7 and 8, they're venturing into new territory, right? Like, that's really cool.
I'm interested, of course. If you did miss the news, you know, next week on the 21st, our friend Brittany from What's Good Games is hosting the Resident Evil first real look at Village and all that stuff. But the tweet read, don't miss the Resident Evil showcase January 21st, 2 p.m. Pacific. We'll be watching live twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Join Resident Evil producers and our host Brittany on a guided tour of Resident Evil Village, including a new trailer, first ever gameplay, and more Resident Evil news. I do think if you're going to talk about any of this stuff, that's where you would see this. I think you end with these trailers, maybe even in the middle. Yeah. Like, this isn't all there is. We're also talking about these things. I think you make this a Resident Evil day.
I'd be surprised if there wasn't some announcement about, I mean, you know, like, there's so many people like me for whom those early survival horror PlayStation games were so formative. And obviously they had great success with RE2 Remake. Like, I can't imagine them not almost, you know, slipping some sort of announcement there to get those people hyped up and give us something to be excited about too.
Yeah, and you have all eyes on you for the day. You might as well.
Yeah.
Carolyn, we ask people who want to squad up and play video games with each other to write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, giving us their name, username, platform of choice, and why they need help in a video game. I read it here. The best friends come and find each other, and they all play games together. Today, Benjamin wrote in. Benjamin needs help on PSN. His username here is Clank Attack, just like it sounds, all one word. Hi, Greg and Carolyn. Longtime fan who usually doesn't play many online games. Greg, I met you at the NYC meet and greet years ago. I'm the food scientist who became a food scientist in part due to your Oreo show.
Changing live, Greg Miller.
You know, when I was eating the mega stuff Oreo, I thought this will inspire someone to be a food scientist. In terms of squatting up, I wanted to play Scott Pilgrim vs. the World Complete Edition online, but I don't have any friends who want to play it. I enjoyed playing the original on PS3, but I could never make it past stage number 4 alone. I haven't bought it yet, so depending on what platform people will buy it on, I'll buy it on that version. I also play Rocket League online and would love to have some friends to play that too. If anyone is interested in squatting up, hit me on my PSN, Clank Attack. I don't know my Switch code off the top of my head. Understandable. Cheers and beyond. I know, right? Oh, SW-124. Like, get the hell out of here, Nintendo. What are you doing? If you want to squat up with Benjamin, play some Scott Pilgrim, hit him up on Clank Attack. Meanwhile, we ask people watching live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames to go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, and listening on podcast services around the globe. Looks like we had a pretty great show. Kebabs writes in to correct me and says, actually, Prometheus tells the story in Immortals. He's a god who can see the future. All right, I forgot that it's Prometheus telling the story to Zeus. All right, Zeus is there, kabobs. Get off my... No, you did a great job. That's a good year wrong. That's what I'm looking for. Believe it or not, that's the end of this part of the show. We still have the Patreon post show. You can get on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. But before we go, Carolyn, once again, where can people keep up with you?
Just, hit me up. Give me a follow on Twitter at Carolyn Michelle.
Excellent. You did a great job today. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. You're welcome back. You know that. Speaking of hosts coming back or whatever, I guess the normal people are coming back. Next week, let's look at what your hosts look like right now. Monday, it's Blessing and Tim. Tuesday, it's the debut of Witta Wednesday on Tuesday with me and Gary Witta. Wednesday, Blessing and Imran. Thursday, Greg and Tim. And then Friday, it'll be Blessing with the Kind of Funny spotlight on Natalie Flores. So we're excited for that one.
She's great.
Like I said, we have a post to do, patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can write into the show, do the squad up, do all the fun stuff, get the show ad-free, support Kind of Funny in general. If you'd rather support on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, you can stick around right now live. Up next is going to be some Friday Fortnite, I believe, with the team on one of the Friday group streams led by Snowbike Mike. Very exciting stuff. Remember, if you're not watching this live and you're in the tractor trailer or looking at trailers or whatever the hell you're doing when you listen to the podcast, of course, you can go to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays, catch all of our Twitch archives uploaded there until the DMC copyright people come for those as well. But we'll see. Who knows? Right now, we got a post show to do. So, until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.